So this methionine was used a lot in dairy cattle and was proved to be good for the immune response, in that immune response, for example. And it's something that I want to check in beef if it's happening also in beef. And I was able to test that because all the animals were improving all the genes related to the immune response.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in beef calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Control the cortisol surge and control your drug costs on your inbound cattle. Make the 21-day SHOT Show a thing of the past with QFA 2000. Are you tired of rolling the dice on calf scours? Get on the Pharmatan Clean Cow Clean Calf program ahead of calving. Go to pharmatan.com for more details. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rangin Livestock Nutrition. We partner with a purpose. Boehringer Ingelheim puts cattle first with innovative health solutions, vaccines, and care for your herd. Visit bianimalhealth.com/cattle.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisemetics. I'm Dr. AJ Tarpoff, and we are dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions from the cattle industry. So sit back, relax, get ready to expand your knowledge with today's episode, and this will be a fun one. This is an area that I've always been fascinated with, and we have a great guest today. So Dr. Sonia Moisa, so from University of Tennessee. I'll give a brief outline of Sonia's background and expertise, but then I'll want her to step in and share a little bit. But I'd like to introduce her. She's currently a research assistant professor at the University of Tennessee. Her background and her kind of area of expertise, and we'll get into this on what we're going to talk about, is beef nutrigenomics. And it consists of the administration of different diets into animals and studying the changes in metabolism, and also how that pertains to expression of genes, which is just it's fascinating. I love this area. It's area I know very little about, so that's what'll be fun today. So she started off her academic career in Argentina and really studied numerous areas of animal production, meat quality, growth and physiology, had an opportunity to got a scholarship to come up to University of Illinois for a master's project, where she continued that growth and physiology path. She found interest in adipose tissue development and muscle growth, which is great because obviously we're beef producers, which is muscle and adipose tissue. She went on to do a PhD at Auburn University, correct? And that's where her shift went to cow-calf management and looking at epigenetic regulation and fetal programming. So how the fetus is actually developing from the nutrients from mom. Then went on to do a postdoc at Kansas State University, which I appreciate that, where really looked at behavior and immunology. So her area of expertise and research is very broad. But today we're going to go back to more of some of the research she's done, current things that she's doing, and we'll get a deeper understanding of this beef nutrigenomics, correct?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So, Sonia, I got to ask, you've started off your career in Argentina. You've been here in the U.S. for a while, worked at numerous different universities. Tell us a little bit more about how you got here today.
So to tell the whole story about my career, so maybe we can talk a little about Argentina.
Yeah.
When I was in Argentina, the first thing I was working on was a carcass quality in slaughterhouses. So I've been working like for 3 years in carcass quality. I got the opportunity to go to Buenos Aires, the capital of Argentina, where I've been in charge of a meat quality lab there. And then I got the opportunity to go to United States, where I did my master and PhD at Illinois.
Gotcha.
And then my postdoc in K-State. And then I've been in Auburn University for 5 years, and now I'm in University of Tennessee. So, what I'm doing here in Tennessee, I'm working in the Genomic Center for Advancement in Agriculture. So we are working for producers, analyzing samples of semen, blood, hair, to see genetic transmitted diseases. So, for example, producers receive an offspring with physical defects, and they don't know what it is. So they send a sample to us, and we detect the genetic disease, and they can select that animal for not using it as a bull, for example.
Now, so are you currently, just in your current job, are you working with some of the big breed organizations as well? So if there is a genetic defect, are you contracted by some of the breed organizations to help with some of that research?
So one of the interesting topics we are working on right now is with Hereford cattle, because they have what is called cancer eye. So we are trying to get a lot of samples to find a biomarker for detection of animals with cancer eye. That is something very typical on the breed.
Oh, it is. And the Hereford breed has come a long way, breeding some color around the eye, some things like that. But taking it a step further and going even deeper down to the genetics is that's fantastic. That's exciting. I think you're a wealth of knowledge, and I really want to dive into this topic of nutrigenomics. So can you start off with what does that mean? I guess in your perspective, how do you explain that area of nutrition and impact of kind of the genome and expression of genes? Kind of in your words, how do you describe that area?
So an easy definition will be, for example, you give a nutritional treatment or a specific diet to an animal, and you analyze how all the genes present in the DNA of that animal are behaving based on that nutritional treatment.
Are you tired of rolling the dice on calf scours? Get on the Pharmatan Clean Cow Clean Calf program ahead of calving. Feed the cow, protect the calf. Pharmatan reduces severity of calf scours and is excellent to support milk production. By cleaning up the cow and boosting IgGs and colostrum, we have dramatically reduced calf losses over the last 9 years. Go to pharmatan.com for more details.
Okay, so what are some ways that we can impact that gene expression in a positive way for cattle producers? I guess why should cattle producers take this into account, or why is that area important for them?
The goal of the area of research is to find biomarkers for any kind of, for example, for animal performance, for growth, for quality of meat. For example, I can give you examples of research that I've been doing. For example, a combination of two treatments, nutritional treatments, could be a win in time. For example, if you early wean an animal, you start feeding corn to that animal versus a normal wean animal that stays with the mother grazing pasture. So that will be a early administration of that corn. And you can see that on the DNA. In one of my studies, I saw the difference in all the genes that are related to adipocyte differentiation. So lipids, adipose, marbling, intramuscular fat. So everything was activated in the DNA based on feeding corn earlier in the life of the animal compared with a normal wean. And that was transmitted in the carcass later on. So there was an economic impact on that research. So that's one of the studies I was more proud of in my career.
So, and so everybody's aware, these aren't, it doesn't necessarily have to be some tiny particle or very specific product. You know, in that example, it was when you introduce corn impacts marbling and, you know, carcass traits. So some of this is just timing. I guess, how early in an animal's life can we make a change and kind of stimulate some of those productive areas, whether it's production, growth, marbling as that example. How early in life, you mentioned early weaning, which is probably what, 90 days?
Yes. Or so? Yeah, 90 days.
Are there other examples or other research that you've done? I guess, how early can we go to try to make an impact in that animal's lifetime performance?
So your question, you're driving me to the topic of fetal programming. So I've been working on fetal programming too. So I was feeding the cow, the pregnant cow, and wanted to see what happened in the offspring. So usually I've been working with a rumen-protected supplements. So I usually say I don't want to feed the macros in the rumen, I want to feed the cow. So I want to bypass that rumen and see the effect on the cow. For example, I was working with methionine, rumen-protected methionine. I was feeding the cow during the pregnancy. And then I, at early weaning the offspring, I was extracting muscle biopsies and checking the DNA, how the DNA was impacted. So I have a significant improvement in growth in the animal. In terms of genes, I don't want to talk about genes to producers, but so what you see on the animal was increasing growth. But so something that is important to mention, so this methionine was used a lot in dairy cattle, and was proved to be good for the immune response. In that immune response, for example, and it's something that I want to check in beef if it's happening also in beef. And I was able to test that because all the animals were improving all the genes related to the immune response. So it's interesting. But what I noticed, for example, if we are feeding heifers, pregnant heifers, could be a disadvantage because the calf is growing too much in the womb. So it's something that I won't recommend to producers to do it in heifers. So calves are second calf for sure, because I see the increase in birth weight, for example, in by using rumen-protected methionine. And I don't want to talk about specific genes, that is my area, but it's what producers are interested to know.
No, so that's interesting. So it can be overdone. And so it's for the right animals at the right time. Question. So methionine, especially for those heifers, does it increase birth weight when you supplement it, it by itself?
Yes. So usually in research, I was working with the maximum possible dose that I can provide based on the recommendation of the manufacturer. I can see the increase in birth weight. And then it's not as obvious later in weaning weight, but yeah, I have a little difference too. But so it's recommended for if we want to take care of the health of the animal because of that effect in the immune response. It's also beneficial for that.
Okay, so we're impacting the immune system, activating more of those key areas and those all the way down to the specific genes. We're activating them earlier to have a more pronounced immune function later in life.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Those that are listening, methionine is just an amino acid. It's an essential amino acid, and so supplementing that at different times, we can start to activate some of these pathways. Early weaning, whether it's fetal programming, still feeding the cow, you mentioned corn, feeding some of those early weaned animals. You mentioned methionine as an amino acid to be able to supplement. Are there other key essential nutrients or other things that can be fed that, whether it's they've been researched that you've done or it's still in theory, just hasn't been worked on yet. Are there other things that in your opinion could work, or we could impact that animal in a positive way?
So I've been working, for example, with niacin. So rumen-protected niacin. In that case, I was focusing on the fescue toxicity issue. So the idea of feeding niacin to the animals was that niacin is known as a vasodilator, and the ergovalin present in fescue is a vasoconstrictor. So my hypothesis was, okay, I will feed niacin, rumen protecting niacin to cows exposed to ergovalin and to see how they respond. So I didn't have any idea if it will work or not. But so I was not the difference between the animals with the feeding fescue, toxic fescue versus the free ergovalin fescue. But what I found is, again, a response to the immune system. So oxidative stress was also impacted for good because of the use of that niacin. So it's something that I want to keep working on, because now I'm thinking, for example, arginine also is known that could be beneficial. There are some studies that are showing that arginine could be also beneficial for fescue toxicity. So it's now that's my area nowadays. I'm trying to focus on this area of research.
Well, you do live in fescue country. So further east, you know, we have a little bit in Kansas, but I never thought of niacin as a vasodilator. You know, I see some of those different vasodilators that are available. Is niacin pretty considered pretty potent in its dilative capacity?
I would say yes, but I didn't see the results in my research. So the effect I was measuring, for example, in the pregnant cows, I was doing Doppler ultrasonography, and I was measuring the uterine arteries in the cows, and I didn't see any difference. So you saw the fescue is like all the blood vessels are constricted because of ergovalin. And so all the nutrients that go to the fetus, for example, are not going where they're supposed to go, and you can have abortions and things like that. I didn't see that much effect. Maybe I should increase the dose, increase the number of animals on the study to have more power in my analysis. But yeah, I couldn't prove that it will help in this case.
But even at a deeper level than what you were measuring, there was still positive benefit on that fetus at, you know, post-birth. We're activating different things. We're getting those pathways kind of primed and ready to go, so it's a more productive animal. So that even by itself, that's a positive benefit.
Yeah, it's usually I see very important differences in gene expression, but to translate that in the animal, to see the effect in the animal, is sometimes is difficult.
No, that makes perfect sense. Now, how long do you track these animals out? So those the calves are. Do you have the opportunity to take those animals all the way to production, to harvest or slaughter, or if they're going to go back into the breeding herd, do you have the capabilities to be able to track those animals all the way kind of lifelong?
To give you an example, in the case of the fescue study, I was feeding seeds to the animals.
Oh, so very potent. So very potent fescue toxicity type of concern.
You look in research, the research previously done, and they are recommending a dose of ergovalin. And I want to make sure that the animals will be intoxicated with ergovalin. So I based on previous research how much I had to feed to the animals in order to create that effect, that toxicity effect. And imagine you go to Tractor Supply, for example, or those kind of places, and you buy your Kentucky 31 seeds, and I had to test them for ergovalin and measure the amount of ergovalin, so based on how much I have to feed to the animals. So it's something very expensive to do this type of study. So producers will go put the animals on the pasture and because of management of the fescue will be less risk. But in this case, it's like I want to have the response, the toxicity response. But to go all the way to the feedlot, for example, and see the effect there is like too much time feeding seeds. So it's something that as a researcher is kind of it's very complicated to do.
Well, no, and what I was getting at is more, you know, if you fed the cows the ergovalin and had that as a, if you were able to track the after the calf was born, any differences in that calf production, After some of the activation of some of the different pieces of the genome, if we saw positive benefits in the health and well-being of that calf, even well after the fact.
Yeah, usually finish my studies at weaning.
Well, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, for example, to give you an idea of a quick study, in these cases, for example, with rumen protective methionine. I have a transportation study. I've been doing a transportation study. So what was the idea in there? I will feed rumen protective methionine, and I know that methionine is a precursor of creatine. So your creatine is giving you ATP, so energy. And I was thinking, okay, if I feed methionines to animals pre-transportation, the animals will suffer less from muscle fatigue, tiredness due to transportation. And when they arrive to the feedlot or the slaughterhouse, they will be in better shape. So my hypothesis was not true in terms of genes. But so what I discovered is that methionine, again, has that effect in the immune system. So instead of thinking about transportation, you can think about a precondition in the animal for the feedlot, thinking that they will be, their immune system will be strong when they arrive to the feedlot, for example. So that's the way that I'm trying to test this methionine that is already well known in the dairy industry, that is working very well in terms of the health status of the animal.
No, that makes perfect sense. You're trying to, there's already created products. There's, you know the science, but that's why we do the research, right? You have a theory and you have to test the theory on if it works in the real world. I'm totally on board with you. It makes sense that it could have worked with transportation, but in the real world it didn't. But we would never know a difference if you didn't try.
I have a funny story about this transportation study because. So I have this was done when I was in Auburn University. So I have Dr. Christy Bratcher was the one that recommended me. Why don't you use the test track of the National Center for Asphalt Technology that was located in Auburn? So I say, okay, there is an oval test track that I can use for my transportation study. So I have the animals on a trailer, and they were like for 24 hours turning on the oval track, and I was able to control everything that was happening during those 24 hours. So what was interesting, I was thinking, okay, maybe I can go from Tennessee to Kansas, to Auburn to Kansas, or something like that, but this was a much better in terms of control of the animals during the study.
I've never seen a semi going around the big track, but that would have been something to see.
Yeah, it was such a show for the people that works in there.
Yeah.
Because what they usually do is test different mix of asphalt. That's it. They never have cows in there.
Well, it's good. That's that is research collaboration at its finest.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we finish up, I've got to ask you some more questions. You know, this the omics, this whole realm of research that when I initially went through school didn't exist. You know, so whether it's genomics, nutrigenomics, transcriptomics, proteomics, there's so much that is coming at us so fast. Can you give listeners like a little glimpse of what some of these omics are and what this area and this growth that you're seeing, I'm sure, because I know I see it as well. I guess, what are your thoughts in this whole omics area?
It's incredible developing. It's changing a lot. But imagine we start from PCR. PCR is a reaction that you're testing one gene. And then suddenly we have this omics, transcriptomics, metabolomics, proteomics area that you can analyze all the metabolites, for example, proteins present, genes present, and you can see the whole story. So you don't see only one tree, you see the whole wood, the whole forest. So it's incredible. And we even in the lab, we are working with single cell RNA sequencing. it's kind of crazy. I don't know if you're familiar with. So it's checking what happened in the DNA of each cell on your sample. So it's something crazy.
And this is happening real time. And the amount of data that we can get out of that information, really, I correct me, but as researchers and people looking at this, it's just trying to make sense of the massive amount of data. We get so much more information than what we ever have in history. Now we just need, we have the computers and the technology to be able to find it, but now we have to make sense of it.
In one study, for example, from RNA sequencing, that is that transcriptomic to see how all the genes are behaving, you get so much information that, for example, as a researcher, you're interested in publishing your data. So there is so much to talk about with that data that you have to split the topic, the results that you're getting, because it's overwhelming amount of information that you're getting.
Well, I hope we can make more and more sense of all of this information, because I find it really fascinating. And I think as a, you know, as an industry, as a profession, I think we're only scratching the surface on a lot of these areas.
Yeah, I agree with you.
If you had to guess, where do you think the next big breakthrough is going to be, whether it's solving a disease or making a big discovery? Do you think it's going to be in one of these omics areas?
I wish, because it's the area where I'm working on. but so the thing is that I see a lot of improvement in the CRISPR area, gene editing area too. But it's something that has to be approved for everybody, you know? You have to have an open mind and agree on things like that. There is a lot to do on with AI now. So it's so many tools that we have nowadays.
Which, and the whole AI trying to make sense of big data and things like that, maybe that has an area, has a piece in this. But as long as people still understand what's happening behind it, I'm on board.
So in terms of AI, I'm using, for example, Volus that go to the rumen, and they're measuring so many different things, pH in the rumen, temperature, and there is like an indirect measure of water intake in a cow. So it's something crazy. But yes, it's so much data that you can have nowadays. So good for science.
It's good for science. It's good for researchers. But man, you can do one study and you can have three or four different grad students and all do different projects off the same one. So it's
exactly.
Yeah, very different than when we went through school.
Yeah, sometimes I think it's important to work, focus on teamwork. Because there is so many areas that you can cover in one study and so many professionals, for example. So to analyze the data that I produce, I'm not an expert in bioinformatics, for example, so I need a bioinformatician. So it's crazy.
It is. Now, those that are listening, I know this may have been the first time that they've heard about some of these topics. Where can people go to find either your research work or more information on nutrigenomics and kind of this area of research? Is there a good place to find that info?
Nowadays with internet, I would say put keywords and check, because there are so many journals that I can recommend, but they are like kind of scientific, too scientific for producers. I will say it, Google it, like I say.
What do you think? Beef cattle, nutrigenomics, fetal programming, any other keywords that might help folks find this info?
Yeah, so, and always be careful about your source, of course.
Oh, yes.
it's a lot on the web, but the specific, I don't want to recommend journals, scientific journals. That is what I usually read, because being 100% research appointment is what I'm doing, going to those sources.
Well, no, that's fantastic. And thank you. I mean, this has been a lot of fun just talking and learning a little bit about this, because we're just scratching the surface of some of these topics.
It's time for our famous three.
Tired of the 21-day shot show? Stop hitting the cortisol hornet's nest with a wiffle ball bat every time you wean, transport, commingle, do shoot work, or experience Mother Nature's mood swings with weather. The cortisol surge can't be stopped, but it can be proactively controlled. QFA 2000 is a proactive approach to reducing the risk of BRD in calves. QFA 2000 reduces the use of antimicrobials, improves innate immune function, and allows the calf to do what it's meant to do, efficiently gain weight. For less than half the cost of antimicrobials, you can take a proactive, hands-off approach with your calves. Control the 21-day cortisol surge and control your drug costs with QFA 2000. For more information, contact us at applied-biotechnologies.com.
I guess here towards the end of our episode, I do, as a part of the Beef Podcast Show, we do have three questions that we ask all of our guests. And I would like to ask you those three if that works for you.
No problem.
Okay. So what is your favorite go-to either agriculture or beef cattle related resource? So where do you go to find information?
I've been teaching beef production for 5 years, so there are so many books about focusing on beef production, but those I believe that will be more for new beef producers. So if you want to be updated in all topics, I will say the journals, magazines for beef producers. I don't know why, I don't want to mention any don't do advertisements, but there are so many available that they can check. And they are up to date in different topics. So the way to keep being updated will be to check those magazines.
No, I think that's great because things change so rapidly and we're getting so much more new information. It's hard to keep updated on everything. So I appreciate that because I always try to stay up to date on everything, even though if it's, I know that, well, it changed over time. So it's lifelong learning is always very important. So question number two, outside of agriculture, outside of kind of your day-to-day, research, what are you listening to or what are you reading? So, what do you enjoy doing outside of research?
Well, I like gardening, but so in terms of reading, so I'm very religious, so I would recommend something like that. There is a lot of books very interesting to read about.
No, absolutely. Well, and it keeps us all grounded and makes sure that we can always read more and learn about all of that. So no, I'm right there with you. I guess the last question I have is, what makes a successful leader in academia, in agriculture? You've been at different universities. You've been exposed to a lot of the industry, worked in different countries. What makes a good leader in our industry?
I would say perseverance, the word perseverance. So that will be one. And also, for example, teamwork. So work with different people, not only you.
No, teamwork and perseverance, I agree 100% that it's very important because we're never limited if we work hard and we have that perseverance, but we can't do it by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, is there anything else you would like to add to our listeners or anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up this Beef Podcast Show?
So during this podcast, I was trying to be like so basic and don't talk for you, for the producers that are listening to your podcast. So hopefully I'm not disappointing them.
Absolutely not. And who knows, we can go deeper into one of these topics for a future podcast and we can get down in the weeds.
Okay, sounds good.
Well, Dr. Sonia, thank you so much for joining the Beef Podcast Show. It's been a pleasure to have you as a guest. I'm Dr. AJ Tarpoff, kind of wrapping up today's Beef Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics, and we will see you on the next podcast. Thank you.
feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.